CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by Siemens Smart Grid. Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjog All. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now, here's Sunjog All.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. As always, we invite you to join the discussion on Twitter, hashtag CTRLive, and look for this show as hashtag leadership. Today's topic is how to manage transitions as a leader. Our guests for today's show are Colin Boyd, who's the VP of Technology and CIO of Johnson Controls, and he'll be joining us shortly. Then we have Chris Moore, who's the CIO of the City of Edmonton, Canada. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. Great. Thank you.
Very good to have you.
Thanks.
And we also have Jim Smith, who's the CIO of the Office of Information Technology with the State of Maine. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you again. And while Cole... All right, so we also have Colin Boyd, who's the VP of Technology and CIO for Johnson Controls. Colin, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning. Good, thank you.
Very good. So we have a great esteemed panelist here, and the topic today is the second in a series of three leadership topics we are doing, focusing on beginnings, transitions, and closures. Be sure to tune in next week to hear the finale to this conversation. But today, the focus is on transitions. Every leader that we know faces challenges in keeping an organization stable during a period of change. So how do we make sure any new programs don't get derailed just as we are getting going? So with that said, the first question I'd like to ask, let's start with you, Colin. If we were to look at the type of environment that we live in, how do you evaluate the need for change within an organization as you go beyond the ideation stage? What factors do you think typically come up that will cause a leader to reassess the business value?
Yeah, I'd classify it into kind of two sizes of change. On the smaller ones, I'm normally looking for the misalignments of responsibility, accountability, authority. You're looking for areas where you don't have the management structure aligned. If you're into the bigger changes, then that's, for us, is kind of driven either by a strategy or by voice of customer, however you get that voice of the customer. So if your market, if you like, if your customers are changing, you're driving an alignment with that. So those are the ones that are normally driving us either on the bigger, more strategic level of changes or the smaller level of changes.
Now, so while you have a point that you made, Chris, if you were to say, I'm going to go about identifying that something needs to be changed, I mean, is this something where you would say, oh, and there are always things that you can see around you which are worth changing? How do you go about saying, okay, I'll prioritize this one before the other, or I'm going to spend more money, dollars, people, processes, effort, sweat equity onto this one versus the other?
Well, for us, similar to Colin, I think the key is to make sure that whatever the change is tied to our strategy. As a city, we have a 30-year vision, and so everything that we do connects in with that. The other factor, though, and we've recently gone live with Google as a corporation, over 9,000 users. That's a very large change, and part of it is just assessing, is the organization ready for that level of change? Does it make sense? And the other thing that we're seeing a lot in our organization right now is what we call change fatigue. There's so much going on. Change seems like the new normal. And I think reassessing is good, but you have to be careful not to look like you're, you know, questioning what you did. And because once you get into the change, you need to keep that momentum.
So you're saying that we should not challenge. So is this somebody trying to save their back and that's why they may never trigger a change just because somebody will say, are you doubting your first decision?
Well, I think it's always good to have a business case, and then you can go back to the factors. If you show up like you doubt, then you're just going to be consumed by the people who want to stick with more of a status quo. So I think it's good to evaluate as you go, but be careful not to look like you're doubting your decision. We've had situations here where some of the leaders have said, you know, we're not afraid. And I think fear comes into that a lot when it comes to some of those, you know, big goals.
So coming to you, Jim, if you were to look at a situation in your organization where changes are to be brought about, which you see, but you're not the one who triggered the initial, the basic initiative, and now you see that the change has to be brought about, and somehow it is your responsibility to see it through or at least get it started. How do you get those other people to understand and perhaps convince them to say, hey, let's at least evaluate this. You may not look bad if this was to be even done because it's going to be for the overall good for the organization.
Well, I think that one of the themes that will go through all your questions, at least from my perspective, is the theme of communication. How do you communicate? How do you keep people on board? How do you get people to a certain position? How do you show the impact of change? And, you know, for us, and we had mentioned change fatigue, which I think is just a great term, but, you know, for us, we assume change is constant. I mean, you know, an IT organization is basically three things: keeping those lights on, projects to move us forward, and then risk assessment, cyber disaster, that type of stuff. Well, those things are changing constantly. The world is changing around us. The tools are changing around us. All those things are changing, and we have to find the people that are going to champion those changes. And, you know, when I talk about communication, I really think a lot about cross-discipline teams. That IT is a part of it. They're at the table, but we need everyone at the table to embrace the change, to understand why you're changing, and help us move forward and to, you know, to remove barriers and things like that. So I think it really comes back to that communication, champion those causes, and, you know, communication takes time, so it's not easy to do. You have to keep at it.
Take a look around. Is anyone in your office listening to music on a boombox? Probably not, because you stream radio through the cloud like a normal, well-adjusted person living in the 21st century. Know what else you can get through the cloud? Your business phone system. Yeah, switch to cloud-based RingCentral. Run your entire business phone system online and use it with your smartphone and tablet for as little as $19.99 a month per user. And then you can put that old PBX in the junk pile next to the boombox. RingCentral, phone systems reimagined. Sign up for a free trial at ringcentral.com.
The U.S. and Canada represent just 5% of the global population, but collectively we consume about 35% of the world's resources. Supply is not keeping up with demand, so change is not an option, it's imperative. Siemens brings knowledge to power through modernization, responsible energy consumption, and greening the grid projects. Siemens Smart Grid has the answers. Just Google Lead the Charge portal.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sunjog All.
So, Jim, we were talking about the situations where people would have in their organization where they're trying to make a transition and they want to perform due diligence with the staff to make sure everybody is able to gauge the effectiveness of a change. Well, how do you get more people involved who and also seek their input so that everybody feels that they have all the right inputs, and you are taking everybody along versus being the lone warrior?
Yes, I think that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things as I thought about this topic, the theme for me that really resonates through all of this conversation is the idea of communication. How do you communicate with all the different partners or all the different players? How do you get everyone on the same page to understand how to move forward, you know, the constantly changing world that we live in with an IT, in the IT organization? You know, as I mentioned, I think that, you know, I think of IT in three ways. You think keeping that railroad running, keeping the lights on, doing projects that move the organization forward, and then the risk assessment, cybersecurity, disaster, those type of things. Well, if you think of those, they're constantly changing, right? They're constantly evolving. The tools are evolving. The organization's evolving. The processes are evolving. So how do you constantly keep that moving forward? And we probably, like other areas, you know, have multiple customers. We have 16 different agencies that support state citizens. So we have to pull everyone together on the communication side, help people shape the vision, and then help us develop metrics and gates to make sure we're making progress toward that vision.
Colin, if you were to look at your organization as you built it, and I'm sure you keep improving it, how do you fundamentally tinker with the foundation so that when a change does come and when you see a change is warranted, you are not fixing things when, and it doesn't delay the whole process? I mean, how you fundamentally prepare your organization to be ready for any kind of transition?
I mean, part of it is the people that you have. You have to hire the people that are used to it and can manage it. In IT, to be honest, given the world we're in, it's a fairly normal situation. You know, everything in IT is constantly changing with the technologies. We spend a lot of time trying to lay out the strategy, the longer term vision, so that as many people as possible within IT can see the roadmap. They know where you're going. Try to explain to them the big picture so that they can see where they fit. I mean, you still have to address individual fears. You know, they can see as the technologies move, they can see that perhaps it's the right thing for the organization, but you have to then kind of come down to the detail level that you address their individual concerns of, okay, does this mean I'm going to get exited from the company or retrained into the new areas? So you have to look at the individual area, individuals, within the overall plan. And we spend a lot of time doing that, and we spend a lot of time trying to assess where the limit is, where the boundary is. That the change fatigue question is just how much change can you put in? You know, you can't have atrophy. You don't want to be slow and last, but equally, if you try and pile too much change into an organization, the earlier comment, I think, from Jim, to keep the lights on, that gets to be difficult because you just get too much chaos. So it's trying to find that right balance of a level of constant change, but without going too far.
So with that said, it's a very interesting thing that you may mention here. So, Chris, building upon what Colin just mentioned, when we say that we got to balance it out and change should be something that keep happening, but it should not bring chaos, or it should not be seen as chaos, because not everybody can deal with that chaotic environment, if you will. But then how do you eat the cake and have it too? Because there are going to be changes which we require, which may have some visible disruption in the organization. And if we are shying away from making those obvious, then we may not be as effective, because sometimes you have to take a quantum leap from where you are, and that would not simply happen if you keep those changes or even attempt to keep those changes as something which is not truly visible or it's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think something I say often, you know, IT right now, because of where we are in kind of the evolution of technology, consumerization, the fact that people can, you know, go to the electronics store and get a solution and come back and implement it, now is not the time for the faint of heart in IT. However, when it comes to change, and change is going to continue, and, you know, it's driven by the needs of our customers and our citizens, really what we're focusing on, instead of jumping in front of the train of change to slow it down, we're spending more and more time on the side of things which we call people care. And so we've got in IT at the city, not just managers who are delivering IT solutions, but we have a whole series of coaches who are focused on the people side. And then we're specifically talking about what are our people projects. We got so many technology projects, but what are we doing to support the people? And I think it may have been Jim or Colin who was talking about, you know, every individual person, when it comes to accepting something new, has that moment in time where they say, oh, I get it, I'm going to be part of it. And so it's really not trying to stop the change. It's about balance for sure, but it's really mostly for us helping our staff to get to a point where they understand, they see their role in it, which is really important, and then whatever other coping strategies we need to put in place. we've done a lot of things, especially in high change. We do some special people things, but it's really about the people. The computers can't run themselves. What we do every day is really based on the people, and we need to make sure we're taking care of them.
Now, with that said, if you were to come back to you, Jim, and look at setting up measures of success for a change and or milestone, do you think in every case for a project we have a defined end goal? And sometimes the changes are incremental and or you played by the ear to say if you change this, what's going to be the end result? So we may not have the same parameters governing an initiative which is related to a transition versus when you're starting a brand new initiative. So how do you control this change to kind of go in a direction that you want?
Well, I think that whether it's organizational change or technical change or any of those type of changes, I think you really do think about it as a project. I think you think about it as a start, a middle, an end. You think about metrics. You think about communication. You think about gates during the process. You have a goal. You have a vision. But, that vision and goal will evolve as you move forward, just like any project. And as you bring more people in and more people have opinions and thought and experiences that can influence in that, I think that evolves as you go forward. And I think you need the flexibility. You obviously have to say, what is the goal? Where am I going to be at the end of a year or the end of whatever that time period is, whether it's an organizational change? I want to take an organization of 500 IT resources and move them to something new. How do I get there? I think all of those need the best practices of a project that have gates, that have communication, that have risk assessment, all those things, and have the understanding to have flexibility as the process evolves. So I really think it's a project management best practices is how you introduce those type of changes.
So Colin, how big of a change that you think we should take on before it becomes too big of a bite to chew? And when we talk about that, does that depend on how far down the line do you want to create a vision for? Because the world around us, if you were to really qualify the kind of changes we should even take on, the world around us, the parameters which govern how we live our lives and do business are changing, and they're changing dramatically for any leader or anyone to have that crystal ball that 5 years from now, this is how we are going to do it. So strategically, we should go for that big bang 5-year initiative.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, interesting, one of the colleagues on the call said they've got a 30-year plan. I wish we did. We couldn't quite plan that far out. We do plan to the 10-year horizon, and then we do, I would say, kind of a detailed plan. We'd call it a strategy to the 5-year horizon, and then obviously you have the short term. I think one of the arts for the people in our positions as CIOs is that balance. You have to have some courage, because you are in the CIO seat. You are probably one of the chief change agents in any organization now. I don't think any organization is going to make any large fundamental change without IT implications or IT enablement. So I think we should be doing more and react. We should be driving. So I think, we lay out that big 5-year picture, but of course, as someone said earlier on the call, things change within that 5-year horizon. And I think one of the arts is, how do you keep a consistent direction? If 1 minute you're going east, then it's west, then it's north, and you overreact, then you end up going nowhere, you're around in circles. Equally, if you're too rigid in a direction and you say, well, that's where we said we're going regardless, and the world shifts under your feet and you don't react to that, that's equally bad. So it's that consistency of direction and purpose, and you give the staff that clear end game, the vision that's in mind. But you do sit there as a CIO thinking, okay, is this still okay? Is it still valid? Is it still valid? Has anything changed that would invalidate the direction? And then you just have to adjust your course as you go, if you need to. And I've had one or two times where we've had to do a radical about turn, and technology shifted. We've had some major IT platforms, and we've said, we thought we were going to go that way. We're going to tear it up, and we're going to put a cloud platform in. So sometimes you do have to have the courage to make a big change when it's needed.
Now, with that said, Chris, do you think CIOs have the same level of immunity as a weatherman, where whatever they predict, and if it doesn't work as it's supposed to, you switch it and life goes on?
I never thought of it that way, but I think yes. I mean, there is the prediction. I think we've got more information than the weather, even though the weather patterns, you know, have been probably been around for hundreds of years. I think most of us in the role take the perspective of being calculated risk takers. And I know for myself, when I look at our organization and what I see is the possibilities. I see us being able to do things differently, to collaborate differently, to use the tools differently. And it's not about predicting so much. It's about making sure that what you're thinking and planning makes sense in terms of the business and the business direction, and also that it's going to be adopted by the business. People talk about selling. You know, I don't sell anything in the organization. I work with the Coalition of the Willing. I try to make sure that our solutions that we're driving for the business make sense for the business, and then they just make sense to, you know, to use. So I think there's probably more certainty in predicting our weather. But on the flip side, you know, when the weather person predicts the weather and it doesn't turn out, they just come back and predict the weather another day. You know, sometimes in our roles, if you don't get the prediction right, you may be doing weather in a different station.
So Jim, when we talk about building a transition team, or rather assembling a transition team, would you look for people with a different DNA who would be able to kind of live with the specific set of ambiguity that might exist because it's changed, it's transition? Or would you take the same people and expect them to turn around and deliver to the renewed expectations and different environment?
Well, I think that I don't think I'd be successful if I always took the same people and expected different results. I've done a lot with workforce development, both here and in other companies I've been at. And, you know, certainly over the ages, one thing we get more and more to is that a person's attributes are really what's going to be the driver. They're really going to be the changer. We assume a certain technology expertise. We assume people are technical and they'll get there. But what makes an organization successful? What makes an IT organization successful? You hit upon one of them when you said dealing with ambiguity. That's certainly one of the attributes we look for. We look for leadership, which I, you know, in my short term, I'll talk of leadership as a combination of vision and execution. We look for teamwork. We look for people to deal with distance teams and things like that. And of course, when you're talking about change, you need people that are committed to that change, are energetic about that change, and can communicate that change. They become your front people for that change and really build that excitement and build that excitement through the organization. So I think there are some cultural things there. I think that, we have a place, obviously, in IT. We need to keep the lights on. We have the people that are doing the mechanics and doing it very well and understanding how their world is changing. I think when you get into more whole-scale change, though, I think you really have to look at the attributes, and you have to look, how am I going to build this team to be successful to get to the end goal? So I think it is a little different from the day-to-day.
Colin, would you have specific inventory of skills and competencies and emotional intelligence that you would like to put out and as a checklist to say, for anyone who's going to join my transition team, these are the musts. And then there are a few nice to haves.
I would like to say we kind of map that in detail. I wish we did. We probably don't. But, I mean, we would certainly look for the balance of skills that you need. I certainly wouldn't be looking for common types, if you like. You need the detail people who are going to go down, and they're the cautionary, the break. Okay, but have you considered, but what if? You need the technical skill sets, you need the people skill sets. You obviously, going back, someone mentioned earlier about the ongoing theme of communication, you're absolutely right. So you're definitely going to have to build a communication skill set in there. And then you've really got to make sure you've picked some people in there with some leadership skills to bring the team, because it's difficult. I think it is more challenging to put heavy change in than to kind of keep lights on. I'm not denigrating my lights on people. I need them. But it's definitely a different kind of skill set to go through and implement major change. And I think you need a
a range of abilities pulled together in a team with a leader that can take the team in that direction and inspire confidence in them. And then, you know, my role is to kind of provide the air cover to make sure if they get blocks coming up from whatever direction, you know, my job is to kind of deal with those blocks and let that team keep moving.
Chris, do you think you would want to have people who would be doing a lot of what-if analysis, and what percentage? Because if there are way too many of those, then it could be analysis paralysis, and transition will always remain in a status quo, or it will never get done.
Yeah, doing the ongoing analysis is important. Developing scenarios, I think, is probably more important. And then we have the ability, because we understand the technology and what happens, we have the ability to anticipate. So I think it's really about having people who are kind of forecasting what some of the challenges are. But, you know, we all in IT, we always kind of plan for the worst and prepare for the best. So I'd like to stay away from paralysis analysis. And sometimes as a CIO, you got to break in and break that ice jam, and, you know, and it's good enough for now. Let's keep moving.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, when we come back. Jim, why don't you take the question where you could perhaps help us define specific roles that you would like to see within your workforce, where especially at the top level, when you're building your so-called transition team and the people who will be reporting to these individuals and are overall in the workforce, so that that role definition and an appropriate allocation of individuals who are assuming those roles will make sure that whenever you have a change happening, it is going to be fluid, so that you are fundamentally, again, working on the foundation and not every time waking up that I've got this change, I've got to make this change. So you're not ripping apart again and again. You have built it by design that anytime a change happens, it just is an easier thing to handle. Please stay tuned. Listeners, we'll be right back.
Take a look around. Is anyone in your office listening to music on a boombox? Probably not. Because you stream radio through the cloud like a normal, well-adjusted person living in the 21st century. Know what else you can get through the cloud? Your business phone system. Yeah, switch to cloud-based RingCentral. Run your entire business phone system online and use it with your smartphone and tablet for as little as $19.99 a month per user. And then you can put that old PBX in the junk pile next to the boombox. RingCentral, phone systems reimagined. Sign up for a free trial at ringcentral.com.
The U.S. and Canada represent just 5% of the global population, but collectively we consume about 35% of the world's resources. Supply is not keeping up with demand, so change is not an option, it's imperative. Siemens brings knowledge to power through modernization, responsible energy consumption, and greening the grid projects. Siemens Smart Grid has the answers. Just Google Lead the Charge portal.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sunjog All.
All right, so, Jim, if you were to define the roles for the people at the top, like who are your lieutenants, and then for the workforce, can you do so in such a way so that any transitions that happen within an organization would be a second nature, and it will just flow smoothly, one or more changes or transitions?
Well, I think that that's an evolving thing, and I think that's an ongoing thing. I think the first thing is to really assess, you know, your direct reports and what do you have, and are the people ready for constant change or a world where things continually move forward, continually evolve. You've got to have that those key people in place. And, you know, we talked before about, you know, we assume some technology skills, but it's really the people skills, the attributes, the things people have. And what I like to do is I like to challenge my team, you know, give them different books. Like, you know, I like the Big Switch, where, you know, Edison talked about that. Edison's original vision was that every factory would have its own generator and make its own electrical power and stuff. And you think of how quickly that changed and how quickly things change. change, and I challenge my team, and I want the people in the roles that understand that can look out 2 years or 3 years. We recently built a new office building for our crew of about 500 people, and one of the things I challenged them, I said, let's not build this for us. Let's build it for that new generation of worker coming in. What are their needs going to be in 5 years or 10 years? Or how do they work together? How do we think about that? So I think that's really what I want at the senior level is people that will challenge the status quo and think about things a different way. But, of course, they have to have the leadership skills, right? They have to have the ability to execute. They have to be able to have build teams that are going to have the right skill sets, the right technology, the right attitudes to continue to move change forward. And I think that's, as I said, that's an evolving thing. But I think as you start to concentrate on that, as you look at that as a discipline, as a benefit, as something you need to bring to the table, you say it's more than technology, it's about attributes, and it's about what you can bring in the force of your personality and how to affect change. I think that starts to help to build the team. But you got to have, I think you're exactly right, you got to have that framework of certain people at different levels within the organization that are going to help you institute that type of change.
Now, life is not always as beautiful, so we know there are obstacles. So, Chris, if you were to figure out and create a playbook or a checklist of things and where you have such obstacles and how to deal with them, do you really, realistically, can you build one when it comes to transitions, the obvious ones, and then train people on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been through some large change here that we've been leading corporately. One of the things that we adopted and I would recommend to people do is consider the five stages of grief and loss. It is a new approach to change management, mostly in North America, because North Americans don't grieve well. People get stuck in the process, shock, fear, anger, denial, negotiating. So that's huge. And once you know where people are in that process, you can help them to neutral and then to see the hope of the future. So people can be their own obstacle. Other obstacles that I'd have in a playbook would be make sure you deal with not having a shared understanding. When there isn't a shared understanding or agreement, then there's ambiguity. And, it's funny, everybody here speaks English to each other, but even when we use the same language, people still hear different things. So consistency about the words we use and the key messages. And one last one that has been huge for us is really important is in the playbook to deal with obstacles, have the staff who are living the change tell their story of how the change has been for them and what they've seen at the other end. So when people can see themselves in somebody else's story, then they see things possible for themselves.
Colin, would you be able to identify the type of changes or the type of obstacles, let's say, as part of the change and or transition process, which people typically find easier to deal with, and then there are others that they chronically struggle with?
I'm not sure there's an individual category. I think it's the scale of change and the surprise of it and the timing. Sometimes I think what to do is fairly straightforward. It's the when, the art of the timing. An idea whose time has come, if you like. So I think some people, you'll see some changes, and they're kind of, well, I wonder why management didn't do it a year or two ago. Why have we been waiting? And then sometimes you'll get that fear of hey, we're going too soon. So a lot of my management team, they can see where the directions are going. It's going to be kind of, when do we pull the trigger? And when's the right time to do it? It's a complex one again. But I mean, one of the arts of the people that are in the senior positions, the reason they have those senior positions is the ability to handle those change and make those decisions on timing and make sure they can bring their teams with them.
So you mentioned the timing. Interestingly, I mean, the world was never built to support everything in a predictable fashion, or whatever will come your way, they'll give you forewarning. And when that doesn't happen and people will be challenged with it, do you think you can do something to make sure that your folks, your team and your crew are able to better handle with the surprise element?
Yeah, again, it's, I think, two things. I mean, one, the leadership, you have to inspire confidence that guys, we can deal with this, we can handle it.
So I think you, part of the leadership abilities is to give the team the confidence that we can do it. And most teams, you know, have a track record. This has happened to us before. We've been ambushed. We've dealt with it before, and we'll deal with it again. So I think if you can keep the confidence level of the team high in their ability to be reactive, they need to. I wouldn't say we abdicate anything in the way of strategic planning. So the less you can do of this, the better. I.e., the more time and thought you put into that strategic five-year view, that you're ambushed less, and that you have plans in place, and then you've got the foresight. That's where you'd like to be, but you just have to accept that there's always going to be that percentage of, should we call it an ambush? And then it's the confidence in the leadership team that, okay, we can pick it up, we'll handle it, we'll run it, and we'll deliver. So it's kind of losing that fear factor and having the team's confidence in their own ability that if they kind of work together, yeah, we can deal with it.
What about the tough choices? So, Chris, if you had to make tough choices, and everybody who deals with change have to either let people go, move people to different roles, deal with some tough conversations around something not getting done, et cetera, what is it that we can do so that, because the change is important too, and there's some bad blood there, and which can adversely impact, what do you do to minimize the impact of something like that happening?
Well, I think, you know, when those changes are needed, besides being obvious to the leader, it's probably obvious to many other people. And so I think the best thing to do, you know, reflect, be thoughtful, but you got to quickly pull off the Band-Aid. Don't take forever to do it. And I favor the polarity of action, but there's also time for reflection. Enough reflection to know that you've thought it through. And the other thing too, when you make those changes, clearly communicate to everybody, you know, why, and it just needs to make sense. And when it makes sense, you know, there's a little dust cloud and then it settles down and we're back on normal. The interesting thing is, you know, change hasn't just started in 2013. As you said, you know, the world's kind of was designed for not predictable. And I think the people, you know, human beings are very adaptive, and you see how people respond and react in disasters and all kinds of situations. So, you know, it's being thoughtful, communicating, but, you know, doing things quickly.
So what's in it for me is a big mantra for everyone involved. Jim, do you think you can get people out of that WIIFM, which is what's in it for me, to what's in it for the organization, for all changes, all decisions that are made?
Well, I mean, all is an interesting word, but I definitely think you can get people there. And I think that's part of, you know, the vision and selling your vision and helping people understand how to move an organization forward. I mean, let's face it, IT people really love to do this stuff. They love to change. They love to move forward in the majority. Most of the people are like this. And they love to serve the customers. How can I make their jobs easier? Or how can I make them more efficient? Or how can I help them communicate? And I think if you sell the vision, I think that's what does it. If you do it in a vacuum and don't communicate, I think you struggle with that. But if you get people, you know, on the bus with you and get people excited about it and take input from people, because, you know, we have to understand that we don't have all the answers. We couldn't possibly know everything, and we need experiences from multiple people. We need input from multiple people. I'm a real believer that if you make people part of a team, they're really gonna pull together. And that's both your IT and your partners there. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes IT will sort of go off in the silo and do things on their own. And we had a recent incident where we were looking at, you know, our upgrade to Windows 7 and put together a steering committee and the normal things. And then I looked at the steering committee and it was all IT folks, and there wasn't one business person on there. And I'm saying, well, guys, this isn't the way to do that. You've got to be inclusive. We've got to bring multiple opinions in here, multiple experiences, and everything together. And I think when you do that, I think people really enjoy that, and I think people enjoy the journey, and I think they enjoy moving things forward.
Colin, you mentioned something where that you have to sell the vision. And the people in sales say you sell the most when you don't sell. So how do you not sell the vision or sell it in such a way so that it doesn't come across as a pitch?
We always try and externalize it to our end customers. So, if you like, the customers for the IT function are essentially internal customers. So I always try and pull it out to the externals. So we spend a lot of time bringing in the business leadership into sort of various IT meetings to brief and explain, you know, where's the end customer viewpoint? What's the reality of this? Why are we actually doing this? You know, we obviously have a lot of automotive customers, so, you know, we'll bring product in. You know, this is the new front seat that we're making for Ford or whatever. So, you know, this is what you're going to see in the next Ford model, whatever. And, you know, so, okay, this is why we're building these new engineering platforms to let these engineers do this. So we're trying to spend a lot of time trying to keep the IT community connected to the outside world, if you like, so that we're not just focused on our internal customers. And kind of surprisingly, that, you know, a lot of the business people, well, why would you guys in IT want to know that? So they're a little surprised that we're that interested, but every IT department I've ever worked in truly is. They're interested in this stuff, and they want to know to what purpose is their hard work being put. Where's the benefit to it? Okay, what sales are going to result? And okay, what's the final, here's the consumer end product at the end of it. I've never actually been in an IT function where they couldn't care less and they don't want to know. They'd rather sit in an ivory tower. Actually, they want that connection back. And I think when they can see that, you know, here's the point and the purpose to it all. So we try and always keep that connection and vision to them. And we do that on a regular quarterly basis. You know, we make sure we have kind of town hall meetings and we connect the business back into the IT. And I hope it's appreciated by, you know, the business that, okay, hey, these guys are actually interested in what we're doing with our end customers.
And do you think, Colin, what you just mentioned about, you know, outlining the vision, connecting it to the end goal, et cetera, does it answer the what's in it for me answer a question for most individuals, because that set of individuals is what's constituting the team, whether on business side and or IT side, for them to embrace the change?
I'm going to hedge the answer on that one, a yes and a no. They can see now why it's truly important for the business to make this change. They can see why we're doing it. It's not just because we've got nothing better to do as the executive management team as to impose a new change on them. They understand why. You've still got that individual piece. Obviously, it's a fact that in any change, if you like, there are going to be winners and losers. The question then is, how do the company kind of handle its losers? So I think really, if I look at the IT, it's more the skills that change rather than the roles. You know, we'll reorganize, but there will still be roles. If you like, a networking guy of my age probably started their career in SNA and then they're kind of in an IP world now and they'll probably retire implementing software-defined networks. But there'll still be a networking kind of guy whose job it is to kind of connect users all over the world or wherever to a bunch of centralized applications and make that work. So we would reorganize and we might go globally, we might go regionally, but there are still some fundamental issues, and one is that the world needs more IT. Whatever you do, there isn't any organized anywhere that's kind of fading away from IT and relying on it less. The answer is the world's going digital. Someone mentioned on the call earlier, I don't know if it was Jim or Chris, you know, yeah, the consumer world, oh, look at the digital devices that, you know, the kids are growing up with today. That is going to require professionally skilled IT people of some nature in some organization to kind of stick this lot together and make it work. So I keep telling my guys, yeah, it's constant change, but, you know, there's no sign of the world using less IT. We're still going to need every CIO, one of their top issues is going to be, how do I find the right skill and talent and retain it? Because I'm going to need more.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And Chris, how about looking for some signs that a transition effort is going downhill and or it is getting derailed? And how do you make sure that you, as a leader, maintain the stability of all people involved as well as of the initiative? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Take a look around. Is anyone in your office listening to music on a boombox? Probably not. Because you stream radio through the cloud like a normal, well-adjusted person living in the 21st century. Know what else you can get through the cloud? Your business phone system. Yeah, switch to cloud-based RingCentral. Run your entire business phone system online and use it with your smartphone and tablet for as little as $19.99 a month per user. And then you can put that old PBX in the junk pile next to the boombox. RingCentral. Phone systems reimagined. Sign up for a free trial at ringcentral.com.
The U.S. and Canada represent just 5% of the global population, but collectively we consume about 35% of the world's resources. Supply is not keeping up with demand, so change is not an option, it's imperative. Siemens brings knowledge to power through modernization, responsible energy consumption, and greening the grid projects. Siemens Smart Grid has the answers. Just Google Lead the Charge portal.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sunjog All.
Welcome back. So, Chris, let's look at some signs of an initiative and or a transition getting derailed. And if they are the type of ones that you can easily identify proactively, is that even a possibility? And if that is a possibility, how do you make sure you maintain stability?
Yeah, I think the key thing to look for in terms of things that may be coming along to derail are probably, myths and rumors. Some people say there's a little nugget of truth in every rumor. In the past, you had to hang around the water cooler to get the rumor. Now you can get it on social networking, internal and external. So I think there's much more information available to us as leaders. But I think the key thing, and I think both Jim and Colin talked about it earlier, is communication. And when you communicate, if you don't communicate, what happens, what people do, is they make up the truth, because humans are sense-making beings, and typically it may not be the exact truth. So communicate. We've had large change initiatives here where on the project website we've actually had a section called Mythbusters, and we just take the current myth of the day and put it up there and say, here's the myth, here's really what's going on. So I think that, that clarity, and then, making sure that all of the sponsors are engaged. One of the things that will derail a project or any change initiative is, not having steering committee meetings, and just keeping sponsors engaged. In some of our recent changes, our senior executive, they've been the sponsors, but our other executives kind of below them have actually been the sponsors of change. So we split, we gave the most senior people in the corporation the senior responsibility, and then the people that reported to them the change responsibility.
Now, Jim, do you think there are some mistakes that you've seen perhaps yourself make and or other leaders make when they are handling transition?
Well, I think we touched upon some of them, the communication, the understanding the culture. I remember years and years and years ago, I was working for a Fortune 500 company, a big company, and we acquired a smaller company. And of course, what do you talk about when you talk about acquisitions? You always talk about the culture. It's easy to talk about, tough to deal with. And, it was that classic case of a big bureaucratic company acquiring a smaller, nimbler company. And I remember people there would say to me, how many forms do I have to fill out to move something into production? I mean, they couldn't conceive of working for that type of organization. And what was interesting, even though we knew about that sort of early in the process, I'd say by the end of the year, 90% of the IT employees from a smaller company had moved on. A few stayed because they just embraced what they were, the new world and what they were going to try. It was interesting that even though we knew about it, we probably couldn't have addressed it a different way. I couldn't think of a different way to address that. So, I mean, there's those type of things where you say, I know about something, I'm going to think about it, I'm going to minimize the impact, but it's still, you know, as somebody else had said earlier in the call, you know, about the breaking the eggs and stuff, there's still a journey there, there's still a change, there's still disruption. So I think if you have the awareness and keep the communication going, it helps, but there's still change coming.
One final question, Colin. If you were to suggest the world out there that as they're handling transition and given the environment that we are in today and perhaps extrapolate what's going to happen in the next coming years, what would be the advice that you'd like to give to the leaders out there and also their business counterparts so that they can help the IT leader do their job and run this initiative or a transition successfully?
Yeah, I think there's no kind of magic bullet. I think someone said earlier, really good project management and project practice. So, you know, if you have project best practice in there, you will have the right change management disciplines and skills built into the project. I think you have to do that communication piece. You can't overdo it. You know, you've got to allay those individual fears and give that common sense of direction and vision. So massive communication. The CIO kind of has to stay completely connected at the top of the house into the business. The business has to have confidence in the IT function to deliver what they need to do. And you as that CIO really need to understand where they're trying to go to, that you've got their confidence. And then you can pass that confidence down to your team. I think you really have to know the team that works for you, how to motivate them, and do they have the right leadership skills to take change and to keep change going? And it's a lot of my part of it for me is collateral damage. I mean, I have a sort of a view that like any fool can drive change. If you don't care how many dead bodies you leave and how much damage you do and what morale impact you have, and as someone said on an acquisition, how many people actually leave? Yeah, well, fine, that's okay. But then you're going to have to come up and clean up the damage afterwards. So it's that skill that you can make change without generating alienation and demotivating teams, losing staff, stressing people, and kind of destroying the organization along the way. So it's making that change in a positive way. And then I think, yeah, you know, if you get blockers in there, you have to identify those blockers. As someone said, take action early. Don't let it drift. So I like compressed time scales. I don't like the long 5-6 years to do something. You lose the focus. And as a CIO, make sure your team's got the air cover and that you understand your culture.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said to me earlier on in my career, and I went, Colin, you have to understand, when technology clashes with culture, culture's going to win every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you ever lose sight of that and you're trying to impose a technology that's misaligned with a corporate culture, too centralist or decentralist or whatever, then yeah, you're heading for failure. But as long as you understand, you know, your business and you're engaged at the top, you know, CIO, hopefully you don't make those mistakes.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Colin, Chris, and Jim, for sharing your thoughts about how organizations and their respective leaders can manage transitions.
Great, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. Be sure to tune in next week to hear the third, which is the final part on how we manage the closures. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog All next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by Citrix, offering GoToAssist, remote support made easy.